Hey everybody, welcome back. Today we're going to be diving deep into James chapter 2 verses 1 through 7.
Right.
And we're exploring a lecture by Dr. David Bauer, who's a scholar of inductive Bible study,
Okay.
which for those who aren't familiar, that's a method of studying the Bible that really focuses on careful observation and analysis.
Right.
So we're going to be like detectives today, looking closely at these verses and trying to extract like the key insights about faith actions and this tricky issue of partiality.
I love that analogy, detectives. I think that's great.
Yeah.
This passage has so many little clues that really reveal a lot about what James is trying to say.
Exactly. So let's jump right in. The passage starts with this like really straightforward command in verse 1, show no partiality as you hold the faith of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it sounds simple enough, right? Like, don't play favorites.
Right, but even at like the surface level, it feels so relevant to like what we're facing today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this idea of partiality is something we all struggle with, right?
Yeah.
Whether we realize it or not.
Totally. But before we get ahead of ourselves, I want to back up for a second.
Okay.
Dr. Bauer mentioned this Greek word for partiality, prosopalemsia.
Yes.
What's the significance of that? Like, why even bring up the Greek?
Well, the Greek word actually gives us a deeper understanding of what James is talking about.
Okay.
It's not just about having preferences, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
It's about judging someone based on externals, like their wealth, their status, their appearance.
So basically, don't judge a book by its cover, but like on a much deeper level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We tend to make snap judgments about people based on what we see on the outside.
Oh, for sure. I've been guilty of that myself plenty of times.
Right, but James is challenging us to look beyond those superficial things and see people the way God sees them.
Okay, so it's about seeing people's hearts rather than their outward appearances.
Exactly.
But then here's where it gets really interesting to me. Like verse 5 says that God chose the poor to be rich in faith.
Right.
But then the scenario that James describes it involves favoring the rich. Doesn't that seem kind of contradictory?
That's a great question, and it's one that a lot of people wrestle with.
Yeah.
I mean, if God favors the poor, why would there be this tendency to favor the rich?
Yeah. Is God playing favorites?
Well, not exactly. James is challenging us to think deeper about what it means to be chosen by God.
Okay, so go deeper for me.
It's not that God loves poor people more than rich people, or that he wants people to be poor.
Right.
It's about recognizing that the poor are often more open to faith and rely on God more fully because of their circumstances.
Okay, so it's not about your bank account, but more about like the posture of your heart.
Precisely. God sees the potential in everyone, regardless of their outward situation.
That makes sense. But then we get this like really vivid scenario in verses 2 through 4 where this rich person and this poor person enter a gathering and the language is all about appearances. Gold rings, fine clothing versus like shabby clothing. It's almost comical how focused they are on like what people are wearing.
It is. But it's not just about the clothes themselves. It's what the clothes represent in that culture.
Okay, yeah. What was the cultural significance of clothing back then?
Well, Dr. Bauer points out that in those days, clothing was a really strong indicator of your social status.
Oh, I see.
So the way you dressed really mattered in terms of how people treated you.
So the rich person is like decked out in fancy clothes, and the poor person is wearing like rags, basically.
Yeah, something like that.
And that immediately affects how they're treated.
Exactly. James describes how they offer the rich person a nice seat, but then they tell the poor person, "You stand over there," or "Sit on the floor by my feet."
Whoa. So they're literally treating the poor person like a servant just because of their clothes.
It's a powerful example of how easily we can judge people based on externals.
And this is happening like in a church gathering, right?
James doesn't specify exactly where it takes place, but the point is that this kind of partiality should have no place in the Christian community.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if we do the same thing today, maybe in more subtle ways. You know, like I've definitely been guilty of making snap judgments about people based on how they look.
Absolutely. We all have those blind spots. Dr. Bauer actually shared a story about his professor who deliberately taught a class one day in dirty clothes to prove a point about how easily we're swayed by appearances.
Whoa, what? He like went to class in dirty clothes on purpose?
Yeah, it was like a social experiment to see how people would react.
That's kind of brilliant. Did his students treat him differently?
I don't know the details of the story, but the point is that it's easy to get caught up in appearances and forget to look at the heart.
That's so true. But I have a question.
Okay.
Do you think James is describing an actual event that happened, or is this more like a hypothetical example?
That's a good question. Dr. Bauer seemed to think it was more of a hypothetical scenario designed to illustrate a point.
Okay, so it's not about like a specific incident, but about this broader tendency towards partiality that we all have.
Right. And he makes it clear that it's not just about rich and poor either.
Oh, that's interesting. What else does he say?
Well, he talks about how this principle of judging based on appearances can apply to all sorts of situations.
Like what?
Like racism, classism, even our obsession with physical attractiveness. It's all about prioritizing outward appearance over inner qualities.
Wow. Yeah, that's so true. Like, we're constantly bombarded with messages about how we should look and dress and present ourselves.
Exactly. And it's easy to get caught up in that and forget what truly matters.
So how do we break free from that? How do we start seeing people the way God sees them?
Well, I think James gives us some clues in the rest of the passage. He talks about the power of language and the danger of becoming judges with evil thoughts.
Ooh. Okay, that sounds intense. We're going to have to dive into all of that next time.
Definitely. There's so much more to uncover in this passage.
All right. Well, this is already giving me a lot to think about. How about you?
Absolutely. It's a powerful reminder that we need to be careful not to judge people based on superficial things.
Yeah, we need to look at the heart.
Exactly. And that's something we can all work on.
Well said. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back to dive deeper into this passage from James. So stay tuned. Okay. So we've been talking about this idea of partiality and how it goes against God's heart.
Right.
But how does that connect to God's law? You mentioned that Dr. Bauer explores verses 8 through 13, where James brings up this royal law of love.
Yeah, the royal law.
What's he getting at there?
Well, he's building on this idea from the beginning. You know, God shows no partiality.
Right.
And he calls us to love our neighbor as ourselves.
Right.
So favoring the rich and dishonoring the poor, that goes directly against that fundamental law.
Okay, so it's like picking and choosing who deserves love based on their, you know, status or wealth is totally missing the point.
Exactly. And then he goes on to talk about this idea of keeping the entire law.
Okay.
He quotes Leviticus 19:17 in verse 10, mm-hmm. which says, for whoever keeps the whole law but fails in one point has become accountable for all of it.
Okay, I gotta admit, that part always makes me a little nervous. Does that mean we have to be perfect in every way?
I think that's a common misconception. James isn't saying that we have to be sinless or that we can never make a mistake.
Okay, good, because that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, he's emphasizing the interconnectedness of the law. You know, the idea that love should permeate every aspect of our lives.
So it's not just about outward actions. It's about a heart posture.
Exactly. It's about the spirit of the law, not just the letter of it.
Right.
And, you know, to illustrate this point, he gives a couple of examples.
Okay, what kind of examples?
Well, for instance, in verse 11, he says, for he who said, you shall not commit adultery, also said, you shall not murder. If you do not commit adultery, but do murder, you have become a transgressor of the law.
So he's saying you can't just cherry pick the commandments you like.
Exactly. It's all connected.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, I see that. So if we're showing partiality to the rich and neglecting the poor, we're essentially breaking the whole law because we're not acting out of love.
Precisely.
Man, that's convicting. It makes you think about those areas where maybe we're showing partiality without even realizing it.
It definitely challenges us to examine our hearts.
Right. And this whole discussion about the law, it ties into this idea of mercy that Dr. Bauer talked about.
Yes.
Mercy. What was that quote again? Something about the law of liberty.
Right. He says in verse 12, so speak and so act as those who are to be judged under the law of liberty.
Okay. The law of liberty. That's interesting. What does that even mean?
Well, it's not saying we can do whatever we want. It's this call to live in a way that reflects God's merciful character.
I see. So it's about extending that same grace and compassion to others that we've received from God.
Exactly.
Okay, that's beautiful. But then James throws in this like zinger in verse 13 where he says, for judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Whoa, that's intense.
It is. It's a powerful reminder that we reap what we sow.
So we want to experience God's mercy. We need to be merciful to others.
Right. It's not about earning God's favor, but about reflecting his character in our own lives.
Yeah. Okay, so how does this all connect to this bigger theme of faith and works that James is known for? It feels like there's more to unpack here.
You're right. This discussion about partiality, it really sets the stage for what James talks about next.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in verses 14 through 17, he tackles the question of faith without works head on.
Okay, let's hear it.
He asks, what good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works, can that faith save him?
So he's saying faith without action is kind of meaningless.
That's exactly his point.
Okay, I'm starting to see the connection here.
And notice how he brings it back to caring for the poor.
Okay, how so?
Well, he says, If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace, be warmed and filled," without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that?
So it's not enough to just offer empty words. We have to actually do something to help.
Exactly. True faith should result in tangible acts of love and compassion.
So this whole conversation about partiality becomes like a real-life example of what faith without works looks like.
Absolutely. It's not just a theoretical concept. It has practical implications for how we treat those around us.
So how do we make sure that our faith is producing those good works? How do we avoid falling into that trap of just talking the talk but not walking the walk?
Well, Dr. Bauer emphasized that James isn't saying we earn salvation through good works.
Okay, so it's not about earning our way into heaven.
Right. It's about demonstrating the genuineness of our faith. True faith naturally overflows into acts of love and service.
It's like the fruit of a tree. If a tree is healthy, it will naturally produce good fruit.
That's a great analogy.
So if our faith is genuine, it should lead to good works.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to this idea of imitating God, right?
You got it.
Like, if God chooses the poor and shows them mercy, that should be our model.
Precisely.
Man, this has given me a lot to chew on. What about you?
Absolutely. It's a powerful reminder that our actions should reflect our beliefs.
Yeah, it's not enough to just say we have faith. We have to live it out.
Right.
And that includes how we treat those who are different from us or who are in need.
Well said. But I think there's still one more piece of the puzzle we need to address.
Oh, really? What's that?
This whole question of judgment.
Oh, yeah. We kind of touched on that earlier, but didn't really dive deep.
Right. How do we know if we're judging rightly? I mean, we can't just accept everything without any discernment, can we?
That's a really good question. And honestly, something I struggle with myself.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I think it deserves further exploration. What if we take some time to unpack the nuances of judgment in the final part of our deep dive?
I'm in. It feels like we're just scratching the surface here.
Me too. There's so much to learn from this passage.
Let's do it. Okay, so let's tackle this whole judgment thing head on. I mean, we've said that some level of judgment is necessary, but how do we do it well? You know, like, how do we avoid falling into that trap of prosopalemsia, judging based on appearances?
Right. Well, it's interesting because James wrestles with this throughout his whole letter. You know, he's not saying we should just blindly accept everything without any critical thinking.
Right.
But he is calling us to a higher standard of judgment.
Okay. A higher standard. So what does that look like? Like, how do we practically shift our perspective?
Well, it goes back to that concept of imitatio Dei, you know, imitating God.
Right.
If we want to judge rightly, we need to immerse ourselves in God's word and let his truth shape our thinking.
So it's about letting God's values become our values.
Exactly. Remember, God sees the heart, not just the outward appearance.
Okay. So instead of jumping to conclusions about someone based on, you know, how they dress or their social status or whatever, we need to ask ourselves, how does God see this person?
Precisely. It's about recognizing the inherent dignity and worth of every person, regardless of their circumstances.
That makes sense. But what about situations where someone is clearly doing something wrong? You know, like that example James gave of the rich exploiting the poor. We can't just ignore that, right?
Of course not. There's a balance here.
Yeah. Right?
We have to hold two truths in tension.
Oh, okay.
God is both perfectly just and perfectly merciful.
Yeah.
He hates sin.
Right.
But he loves the sinner.
So we need to, like, condemn the sin but still love the person.
Exactly. It's not always easy to do.
No, it's not. It feels like walking a tightrope sometimes.
Right. And that's where discernment comes in.
Okay, so what is discernment exactly? Is it just like having good judgment?
Well, Dr. Bauer said that discernment isn't about being judgmental or condemning. It's about seeking wisdom and understanding.
Okay.
It's about asking questions, listening carefully, seeking God's guidance.
So not rushing to judgment, but taking the time to understand the situation and see people through God's eyes.
Right, and that requires humility. You know, admitting that we don't have all the answers.
Oh, man. Humility. That's a tough one. But yeah, I see how it's connected. It's like the more humble we are, the more open we are to seeing our own blind spots.
Exactly.
So it sounds like this whole judgment thing, it's not something we just figure out overnight.
It's a lifelong process.
Yeah.
You know, constantly seeking God's guidance, examining our hearts and letting his love shape our judgments.
And we're going to mess up along the way, right?
Right. Of course. We're all human. We're going to make mistakes.
Right.
But that's where God's grace comes in.
Thank goodness for grace. So as we wrap up this deep dive into James chapter 2, verses 1 through 7, what's like the key takeaway for you?
Well, I think for me, it's that judgment is complex, But it's something we can't just ignore.
Yeah.
We need to engage with it thoughtfully, prayerfully, and with a deep reliance on God's wisdom.
And grace.
And grace.
I love that. It's not just about judging others rightly, but also about examining our own hearts.
So true.
Making sure that our actions reflect God's love and compassion.
Well, friends, we hope this deep dive has challenged you to think differently about judgment and partiality. As you go about your day, we want to leave you with this question. What blind spots might you discover if you observed your own actions and words for a week? And how could you start to address them? Allow God's grace to shape your judgments, moving you closer to the heart of Christ. Keep diving deep, friends, and keep seeking God's wisdom in all things.